All right. If it's Tuesday at 1, it must be Tuesdays with Dave. Welcome to today's call. I was just returning a text from a mastery student who was asking me about another mastery student who's selling a property out in Georgia. So he was interested to know what I knew about him and if I knew anything about the property, which I knew nothing about the property, but I do know the mastery students. So it's Tuesdays with Dave, and oh my God, the summer's over. This is so sad. Summer's over here in New England, you know, right around August 15th to the 20th, the nights start getting cool, and it's the first sign of the autumn air coming in, and that started happening, and actually Sunday was a cold, raw day, but it's back up in the 80s today, which is nice. We'll have some, actually, you know, the official end of summer is in September. We'll have nice weather through that. We'll actually have nice weather up until Thanksgiving, and then in Thanksgiving, all of a sudden, it gets cold. It gets cold. And then in January, first week of January, right after Christmas, it starts snowing. And then we have winter, which is great, which is a great season around here. All right, so I want to welcome to the call. If you're new to Mastery, you are in the right spot because you simply listen to your coach, go through the 700-plus hours of online training. It is daunting, but the best part about it is you get that for life easy. Anytime you have an issue with any part of your business, you just go into that website. That will get you out of that problem. So welcome to the call. And just simply follow the program. Program works. We've been teaching it for 14 years. I've been doing it personally for over 22 years now. And these walls are lined with people that have done it successfully as well. So it's a good thing. We've got some upcoming events. We've got the Charlotte Immersion Training happening September 8th to the 10th in Charlotte. If you're not familiar with Immersion, that's where we actually take you through all the paperwork that a property has, all the due diligence, and figure out if it's done right or actually how to do it right. And then you go to the property the next day with the property tour, and then the third day you taught how to build your team. So that's September 8th and 10th in Charlotte. We have Managing the Manager September 15th through the 17th. That's right here in Boston. We have the Perfect Your Presentation Workshop, which happens October 4th and 5th down in Plymouth, historic Plymouth, Massachusetts. That's a program that we have only done once before, and we did it about 6 or 7 years ago and decided to update it and bring it out of the cobwebs and basically show you how to give the perfect presentation so you can get a lot of private money to fund your deals. And then we've got a completely new program called Elevate, which I'm really excited about, that I'll be teaching. It's three different meetings, three times a year. And it's October 6th and 7th, again, in historic Plymouth, Massachusetts, where the Mayflower is resting and where the Plymouth stepped off on that rock. And I think of all the times I've been down to Plymouth, which is about 30 minutes from here, of all the times that I've been to Plymouth with friends that have never been to Plymouth, the first thing they say is that the rock? Because the Plymouth Rock is very, very small. It used to be big, but everybody all the tourists from out of town came and chipped pieces off the rock to take home with them. So the rock is not very big anymore. So Elevate is all about how to peak your performance, how to get to the next level, how to have your best year ever. And if you're interested in what Elevate's all about, it's the first event that I'm actually teaching myself. Like I said, it's three two-day meetings throughout the year. You can go to daveevent.com. Daveevent.com tells you all about Elevate. So I want to give a high five to Ramon and Christy Gonzalez. They're out of Miami. He did his first deal. It was an 18 unit, bought it for $1 million in January in 2016, fixed it up with all the efficiency and raised the rents from $500 to $600. Oh, the rents were $500 to $600 and you raised them to $1,100 to $1,150. That's quite a value add. Also fixed up all the one bedrooms. So he did that with the efficiencies. Fixed up all the one bedrooms, raised the rent from $500 to $750 to $1,200 plus. Sold the property in August of 2017. That's about a year and a half later for 2.1. Bought it for one, sold it for 2.1, cleared a profit of just over $1 million for holding the property for 18 months. Then get a second deal, purchase a duplex for $190,000, purchase a duplex just 4 months ago out of his self-directed IRA for $190,000, invested about 15K in improvements, have it under contract for 315,000. Their profits are going to be about 83,000. Not only that, I happen to know that they recently had a baby. So they get a high five for those deals and the baby. High five to the Gonzalez's. Excellent. And a special high five for Alice Cummings. Alice Cummings, actually, you know, she's part of the Mastery family, so we like to tout the accomplishments of our Mastery students, and she just did the half Ironman up in Maine, 7 hours and 5 minutes. And I saw that medal this morning. I texted Alice to find out exactly what race that was in Maine, because the medal is of a lobster. Actually, let me see if I can show it to you in the camera if you happen to be watching this on live stream. We are on live stream today. So here's Alice right here. And that's her medal. And I like that medal. So I want to do that race next year so I can get that medal. Alice is actually doing the Lake Placid Ironman. I saw her at Ultimate Part 9. She told me she got a spot in the Lake Placid Ironman. That's the Ironman I did in 2013. So I told her I could give her all of the different training tips for that particular course, and we want to wish her well for that as well. That's probably going to take her about 14 and a half hours to do. So high five for Alice. Yeah! If you're an Ironman, let us know. All right, so first question. Now, if you want to call into the call and have some questions answered, you can press *0. Operator will come on the call. We'll start queuing up the callers. And you can ask any question, whether it be real estate, any aspects of life. I am a good, I have a lot of life experience. I have a lot of real estate experience. So I can give good answers for both. So while they're queuing up the calls, Wayne Sheldon from Seattle writes in, what is the best way to deal with a 70% at-will tenant? What is the normal amount of at-will tenants, if any? To try to keep at-will tenants down to as low as possible, like a handful, because an at-will tenant, if you're not familiar, are tenants that have the ability to run a 30-day lease, 30-day month-to-month basis. So they can give you a 30-day notice and move out. And the first thing we do anytime we buy a property is we get them off of the 30-day lease and we put them in a 60-day lease. I mean, a 1-year lease with a 60-day notice. So at least we have 60 days before somebody moves out to get another tenant in there. So the thing to do is to take a look at all of your other leases, find out where, you know, your holes are. When I say holes, where do you have the least amount of lease endings? And then kind of spread out these new ones and start, you know, start moving them over to 1-year leases. And if they want to stay year to year, you charge them an extra $25 to stay year to stay at will, which most of them don't take, but some of them do. But that's how you do that. So just kind of like spread it out, roll them over, and charge them $25 more if they don't take. Here's another one from Chris Hawes. From Monroe, North Carolina. He writes in, regards to the underwriting, which sheet do we show the investor, the template or the assumption, or should we create a property package for the investor? You don't need to create a property package for the investor. When you're doing the underwriting, you want to show them their real numbers. So if you're going to negotiate using your underwriting template, which is something that you can certainly do, and especially if a seller's prices are way off, I advocate doing that as well, because just show the first of all crazy prices. The banks aren't going to finance them. They stopped doing that before the last crash. Well, that's what caused the last crash. So I always like to show a seller based on their numbers what the true numbers look like, what the cash on cash return is, what the cap rate is, what the debt coverage ratio is, and just ask them the question: if I bought at this rate, where would I get financing? And then show them where you can buy at. But no, always base it on their numbers. As long as their numbers are correct. If their numbers aren't correct, then you go to where the numbers should be, where the rule of thumbs are, or, you know, it's usually where they're not correct is are in the expenses. So you go to the expenses, and you can, from your lending broker, they will know what the average expenses are for that particular area in terms of the insurance, in terms of the common area maintenance or the The contracted services, the repairs and maintenance, all of that. So they'll know every area has a, there's a book out there called Multifamily Cost and Sense. It'll cost you about $300 to get it. But, and that tells you just about every city, primary, secondary, and tertiary city in the United States. It tells you what the average costs are. Now, in our underwriting template, we give a rule of thumb. But if you talk to your lending broker, he'll tell you exactly what they are in that particular city. And they know because they need to know because they're lending in those particular areas. You can go to, when the seller's expenses are way out of whack, you just say, hey, you know, I spoke to Joe Smith lending broker who represents X amount of different lenders, and they're saying that the average costs are this in this area. Why are yours so much lower? Because typically they're not higher. They're usually a lot lower. So, and if they are higher, you keep their higher amount. But why are yours so much lower? And the reason typically is they're not doing their deferred maintenance on their properties. So yes, show them their numbers unless their numbers are ridiculously low, and then support the fact why their numbers are ridiculously low. All right, I got a bunch of more questions in here, but what I want to do is I want to open up the lines and start taking some questions on this day after Labor Day, the official beginning of the fall season. Apple pies, football, Patriots are defending this year. A lot going on in the fall. One of my favorite times of the year. All right, operator, who's our first caller?
Okay, our first question comes from Stephanie. Stephanie, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave.
Stephanie.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I hope you had a great holiday. Yeah. So, Dave, I was presented with an opportunity in Cleveland, and
yes.
The property, according to my contact, is currently 20% vacant, but they're steadily renting up the vacant units. They're sort of renovating and renting them out. But my first question was about Cleveland itself. My contact is saying, oh, Cleveland is a great market, but when I did the analysis that you recommend in terms of population growth and job growth, I'm not seeing that in Cleveland. Are you looking at numbers that tells you otherwise, that Cleveland might be an interesting opportunity going forward?
Cleveland over the last 5 years has had a really nice turnaround. It used to be they lost a lot of population.
Mm-hmm.
They lost some industry. And then they started offering off-site types of incentives for people to move into the inner city. They offered incentives for people to rehab projects in the inner city. And it finally took hold about 5 years ago, and it's doing really well. I used to tell students at the Multifamily Millions Boot Camp to, if they wanted to practice their broker script, calling brokers, and they were too nervous to call the market that they were interested in, call Cleveland, because everybody was lonely in Cleveland. But that's not the case anymore. So I haven't seen the recent numbers in Cleveland, but I know that market's been doing well for the last 4 or 5 years.
Right. Okay. I see. And this particular property... Sorry.
What are you seeing for numbers?
Well, I was seeing that I don't have my spreadsheet open, but over the last 2 years, population growth hasn't been there, and neither has job growth. It's actually been negative.
What do you think? Job growth is more important than population growth. What do you think for population job growth?
Okay, let me find my spreadsheet, and I'll open it up and share that with you.
Okay.
While I'm doing that, in the meantime, the property is, as I said, about 20-25% vacant. And in that situation, and the seller is looking to close in the next 45 days or so, is it feasible to go into a situation that has that level of vacancy and find financing on such a short turnaround time frame?
How many units is it?
It's about 80.
45 days is a short time frame for that. It could be turned around. It's tight. Why do they want to give only 45 days? I would negotiate out 60 if you like the deal.
Right. No, I I'm not quite sure how real the seller is. He told me that the seller is also looking to refinance. So they'll take it, they'll sell it, or they'll refinance it. So I don't have the sense that he's committed.
Okay. Has he given a price?
Yeah, the price is under. So price is about $2.4 million, and
the numbers work on the price.
He's still getting me the expenses, and I haven't done the CapEx, so I haven't done the numerical analysis because I was concerned about the market and the financing. But theoretically, according to the contact, it could work.
You could probably get the financing in that amount of days. Are you familiar with Eric Stewart? Have you been to boot camp?
Yes. I know Eric.
So do you have Eric's number?
Yes, I do.
All right. So I would give him a call. He can tell you how fast he can turn around something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. With that level of vacancy, I would think that would be bridge financing, though, wouldn't it?
Yep, it would. You'd have some sort of a bridge going on. Fannie Mae has a really good program for bridge financing, where they will they'll eliminate a lot of the rollover costs when you hit 85% occupancy. So you should look into that program. I know Eric does it.
Okay. I see. Okay, and I was able to open up my spreadsheet, Dave, and for job growth, the last year over year, it's up 1.5%. The prior year, it was down. So 1 year was up, and then 1 year was down. It was basically down, but it was 0.3% for job growth.
I would call the Economic Development Committee and find out if they've got new jobs coming in. You know, that could be the start of an uptrend. Or that could just be the start of some meandering. It's pretty close to the 2 that you need, although we'd like to see 2% year over year. So yeah, I would get more information from the Economic Development Committee.
Right. 2% year over year for 2 consecutive years or just the most recent year when you're doing the
We'd like to see the 2 consecutive years, but if we know a market is aggressively recruiting companies, then we'll go in early. We won't wait for the 2 years.
I see. And then the population growth has been negative. But you're saying that's less important than the job growth.
Yeah, job growth is more important. Well, population, a negative population growth, that's what Cleveland's been seeing for a long time.
Uh-huh. Right.
So,
okay.
What about household formations? That's the other important factor. Job growth and household formation. Household formation increases. Population decrease could be, you know, more deaths than births. So you'll look more deep into that.
Okay, look at household formations instead. I see. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good luck. And if you do buy in Cleveland, do you live there? Near there?
No, I don't.
Well, if you do buy in Cleveland, then go to Mally's Chocolate Factory. It's on the way to the airport, and send me some dark chocolate.
I'll remember. Thanks, Dave. Bye-bye.
I appreciate that. Thanks. Okay, who's next? Who's next up on the Wisecracker line?
Okay, up next we have Dave. Dave, please go ahead. Beautiful Dave.
Hello, is this Mr. Lindell?
Yes, you can call me Dave.
Yes, it's this is Dave from Kansas City.
Hey, Dave, what's going on in Kansas City?
Not too much. I was recently at one of your seminars in Overland Park a couple weeks ago, actually.
Yeah, how was it?
It was great. Lots of good info.
Yeah, good.
But
now what's up? You go out and do something with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I'm just kind of starting to get into real estate, so I'm kind of in the learning phase. But honestly, I just wanted to ask you, I mean, like, how large do you have to live Lindell?
How large do I have to live to what?
How large do you have to live Lindell? It was, like, on the pamphlet that we all got.
Oh, you know, that was I was on the cover of that magazine. That was probably about 6 or 7 years ago now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and that the story on the inside is the story that they did on the company. So I'm actually, I am not a very materialistic person. Actually, I own a small home in the area that I grew up in. I do have a place in Boston, and I had a place in the mountains. But nope, I'm not very materialistic. Living large for me is giving back. So, you know, give back to the family, give back to my favorite charities, and that's what living large is. And doing a lot of outdoor activities.
That's awesome. So, you know, for me, just getting out of college, how would you suggest that I go about acquiring my first property? Do I do something like smaller, like a duplex, or do I try to get into something bigger, like a 6 or an 8 unit?
The whole thing is a mindset, you know. So the first thing you do is you do what you feel comfortable doing, you know, so that you'll naturally actually get it done. I used to teach people to do 100-unit deals, 100-plus unit deals, and that's the way to go. And then I realized that subconsciously, a lot of people just weren't ready, even though they've been through the training and they knew how to do it. So we now teach, over the last number of years, to be very successful, is to do what you're comfortable doing first, and then you'll naturally grow from there, as long as you keep educating yourself. So I wouldn't do
right.
a 2. But I would look at a 3 to 6. You know, eliminating the 5-unit. The 5-unit is the first step into commercial properties, and they usually have a hard time getting those things to cash flow. Actually, you look at a 5 to see if you can sit down to a 4. It's a lot easier to resell as a 4 than it is a 5 because of the commercial
right.
aspect of it. So I would look
right.
at 3 to 4s and 6s. And that's what I bought the first 3 years. That's all I would buy because
okay.
I was so afraid to buy anything bigger. But you can,
right.
yeah, you can do it in your own backyard, build your team. Were you at the 3-day boot camp?
No, I actually was not at the 3-day boot camp.
You were at the 2-hour preview?
Right.
All right. So we teach two things. We teach to invest in your own backyard, and we also teach to go out and invest in emerging markets. So you can get a lot of good experience in your own backyard by talking to brokers and seeing properties and looking at financials, and then using that information that you get from that to get on the telephone and start interviewing brokers and management companies. Like in the emerging markets,
right?
And that all works
what
out.
I thought was really great. I mean, just at the, you know, the 1 day, you know, couple hours seminar that I was at, you know, I really liked how you guys, you know, presented the numbers on like what kind of figures that you have to show from, you know, someone's trailing 12 in order for you to even consider investing in it, and I thought that was really helpful.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that makes this education company, you know, we've got two companies, the acquisitions company and the education company. But the fact is, you know, we continuously do. I'm actually flying out tomorrow to take a look at a deal in a property that I own in another market, and then flying down to Dallas for a deal that we put together that we're just finalizing the P&S. So we do what we teach, so we pass that on. So it's not theory. It's all the nitty-gritty of how it gets done. That's why it works.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was great, and I just wanted to, you know, just call in, but, you know, just say thank you for putting on that free event, and it's fantastic. I hope you just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and good luck out there, and when you need us, call us. We're here.
Yeah, okay. Thanks so much, Dave. I'm a big
fan. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, who's next on the call?
Okay, next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave. It's Mark Dupuis calling from Ottawa. How you doing?
How's it going up there? Good. Is it getting cold up there yet?
Pretty good. I'm actually on my way home from Louisville. I've been in Louisville for the last week.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not really sure. we got a 40-unit under contract.
A 40 or
so,
4?
40.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. So I'm trying to put it together, and we're trying to raise the equity portion, actually, obviously, right now. So could you some help there if you have some? I've been in conversations with Eric Stewart he's not really interested in sponsoring it, but I'm waiting to hear back from him to see if he can put the financing together on it. So,
well, you know, there might be somebody interested in the Louisville market. It might be close to there on this call. You can certainly give out your email address, and perhaps if somebody's interested in taking a look at that property with you, you might find a partner. You want to give
out
your email address?
I do. It's Mark, M-A-R-C, dot Dupuis, D as in David, U as in uniform, P as in Peter, U as in uniform, I as in India, F as in Sierra, at simpleacquisitions, with an S, dot com. So mark.dupuis at simpleacquisitions.com.
If you're from Ottawa, are you considered an Ottawinian?
I don't know. I think it's Ottawatonian. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Ottawatonian?
I don't know.
Oh, that's certainly an Ottawa name. Ottawa name.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I wish you luck on that project. How did you find that deal?
We've been nurturing relationships with a couple of brokers, and this one actually came to us in June, and his numbers were way off. And when I usually do a really quick and dirty, you know, give me the NOI, and just, you know, divide it by the cap rate and kind of come up with a number. I don't do very deep analysis initially. And I came up with a price, and they basically told me to take a walk. And then just last week, they came back to me and said, hey, are you still interested at this price? I'm like, yeah, definitely. So that's when I started digging in and doing the numbers and actually realized that they had to come down a little bit more. So they ended up coming down a bit more from that initial analysis that I did. So we got it for a little bit cheaper. And I'm actually hoping that it might come down a bit more, because when we did our inspection, I have a really, 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 really good property manager in Louisville. He's absolutely incredible. They showed up there on Friday. So we had an inspection Friday morning. I think he showed up with 7 guys to do the inspection.
Wow.
And they went through everything, top to bottom, everywhere. They were bringing stuff to the owner saying, hey, look, did you realize you had a pipe that's broken here? So I'm expecting to be able to get some ammunition there that I might be able to negotiate something a little bit better than what this
thing. Just don't try to nickel and dime on deferred maintenance, you know? Did you do a dial-in factor? Did you dial in X amount for deferred maintenance when you were putting in your offer for repair allowance?
I did. What the broker actually told me, this is something I'm trying to reach the broker today on, is he told me initially that 50 to 60% of the units were redone. And so I actually factored in some dollars to redo the rest. But when I showed up there, I didn't see any units having been redone. So I'm trying to get an idea of where he came up with that number. But I hear what you're saying about, you know, trying to retrade this thing just because of, you know, nickel and diming and stuff on deferred maintenance. But some of these things are pretty huge, so that's the reason why.
Oh yeah. If you didn't, if it's something that you didn't expect going in, and they didn't tell you about it, then you have every right to retrade. Certainly.
Yeah. And that's,
but it was just
that's
a little deferred maintenance. Good.
I don't know if they have much. He's the owner. I don't know if he's just posturing but he said, look, and this is before the inspection. He said, look, you know, your guy's going to come down tomorrow and do an inspection, but we're pretty much at our bottom dollar here right now. So don't expect that there's going to be any discounts. That's what he said to the broker. So I don't know if that's true, solid, or whatever. So
you don't know until you ask.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually have a question for you that's not related to this property. You say to do, you know, to have your feet in your existing market, but for Ottawa, this market is just incredible. It's like the cap rates are so low that you just can't buy. Like we tried to buy a fixer upper before I went down to Louisville, and it sold for $400,000, something that I would have had to gut completely and redo. So the market is really, really tight there. So what do you do when you got that kind of environment going on? Do you just kind of stick to more emerging markets or what?
Well, in your own backyard, you know, the stronger the relationships you have, even in a really tight market like that, you know, you'll pop one or two deals. What you will get from going through the process is the experience, you know, of being face-to-face with the different brokers and going different properties. I would set yourself up in Louisville first. That's your first market. And get, regular deal flow coming in. I would get at least three deals in the marketplace. And once you hit that, then start looking at another market to invest in. A mistake that a lot of people make is they try to hit too many markets, especially if you've been to boot camp and you've been given a list of 20, 26, 27 markets that are doing good right now. So people kind of scratch the surface, but they don't really build the foundation. So you build the foundation by doing deals. You get yourself set in the market, and that will really set you up for a lot more markets to come.
Yeah, and that's what we were trying to do, is trying to really set ourselves up in a market solid before we start doing other things and going into other markets. All right,
yep.
I appreciate it.
Right. All right,
you.
Good luck.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Bye. You're welcome. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to read another question from, this one's a long one. It's from Wayne Balsinger from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He writes in, assuming that local market conditions allow for loan terms of 20 to 30 years, I'm wondering if there's a standard term we should be looking for when getting a mortgage. I've been using the assumption of a 20-year term, which I thought was the term we assumed in the immersion training. It was actually a 25 or 30-year term. I'm not sure exactly what Jeff's numbers are, but we're usually assuming a 25-year term for multifamily property. If you can get 30, we'll do 30. It says, but you can tell me if there is an expectation in the industry that 20 years versus 25 or 30 years is the industry standard to evaluate a deal. I think the industry standard is 25. I shouldn't say I think. I know for years I always evaluated at 25. There's been leaning towards 30-year mortgages now in the industry, but if you stay at 25, you'll certainly be safe. When I first started buying smaller properties, I was buying at 15 and 20-year amortizations from local banks. And 20 years later, that worked out really well because those things were paid off, and we had a lot of equity faster in those properties than just doing 25 or 30 years mortgages. I had gone to a seminar that said, you know, get the lowest terms that you could possibly get and still have the property cash flow properly. That's what we did. Last paragraph says, I'm looking for a deal now that doesn't cash flow 20 years, but will have 30 years. And I realize that the longer term negatively impacts the equity buildup for our investors and don't know what they expect. You know, your investors expect you to be in that, excuse me, your investors expect you to be in that deal for anywhere from 3 to 7 years. You're not going to get your principal pay down as a big benefit for doing these deals. Your big benefit comes from the value add. You buy a property that has a value add of raising rent, of increasing occupancy, of decreasing expenses. Being in an emerging market is its own value add in itself. That's how your investors benefit the most. So that's what you really want to be looking for. So don't really worry about it. You can actually have the numbers work better by doing a 30-year term. Your cash-on-cash return, your cap rate, your debt coverage ratio, they'll also be better at a 30-year term than a 20-year term. Even the big deals doing that way, knowing that if you have a strong value add on the back end to give your investors the equity buildup that they're looking for, that's how you really win in this game. So think about that. All right, I'm going to open it up for the next call. Who's the next caller?
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment. I just want to remind everyone who just joined and has a question, please press star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Okay, so people on this summer vacation, excuse me. So press star zero, get yourself in the queue. Josh Erickson writes in from Fremont, California. He writes in, hey, here's my question. I am just getting out, and I was wondering what habits should I start forming to be successful in business? Wow, that's such a broad-based question. Let me say this, okay? The habits that you should start to be successful in business are, number one, you could start with your thinking. And I've learned this over the years. I didn't know it at the very beginning of my business careers, and I didn't know it in life. But it all starts with how you think. And it's all about, you know, you hear about the law of attraction, you know, and it's like it's a foo-foo type of a subject. But in reality, it's true, because if you've ever read A Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, which is a great book, by the way, one of the statements that I wrote down, I always take notes on books. I get referrals from people for these great books, and then I take notes. One of the notes I read that I was reviewing with a friend, because he was having a difficult time in his life, and I said, hey, I said, you know, you want to first start off by reading some really good books, and that was the first one I gave him. And it states that what you run from finds you, okay? So what you fear most has a way of finding you. So what do? And if you're thinking about your fear, that's what you're going to manifest. So instead of manifesting your fears, you want to manifest the things that you want in life. So you think about those things happening instead of the opposite, which most people do. They think about, you know, the negative things happening. So the first thing, if you're going to start a business, is think that it's going to be successful. Think about all the good things that will happen. And I'm not a Pollyanna, but I have realized that by reading books like Viktor Frankl, his book Asking It Will Be Giving, Ethan Cole's book, I think it's called Now. All these different, and even just going on the internet and YouTube and watching these things on the power of positive thinking, it really relates back. You know, they say positive attracts positive, negative attracts negative, ugly attracts ugly, and I'm thinking in terms of attitude. And, you know, if you want to become a beautiful person, then you've got to find the beauty in everything and in everybody, no matter how nasty they are. If you can find the beauty in every situation, you become a beautiful person. Think about that. So it all starts with business. I mean, it all starts with the way you think. The second thing is you've got to schedule yourself. You've got to set down a vision. You've got to set down goals. You've got to set down milestones of reaching those goals. You've got to schedule, you know, what you're going to be doing for the next month. Actually, if you really think about it, you want to be reading a book called The Rockefeller Habits, and that will show you how to schedule out next year. Okay, starting with the year and moving backwards, the top five things that you want to do for the year, and then move yourself backwards. And either Friday afternoon or Sunday night, you should be scheduling out your week, and then the night before, schedule out your day. So it's really about scheduling. And also, so if you learn about scheduling, and you learn about the mental game, then it's all about, you know, what are you reading? How are you improving yourself? What classes are you taking? What seminars are you going to? Because no matter where you are right now in your life, that's where you become the person that has attracted the situation that you're in. So if you're not happy with the situation that you're in, you need to become a different person. You need to attract other things. And your circumstances, you know, a lot of people blame their circumstances. They blame, you know, where they were born, how they're living their life, their education that they got, you know, the family that they grew up in. A lot of people blame a lot of different things, the economy. But you know what? You really have nobody to blame but yourself, because you have become the person that has attracted your surroundings. And I know that's kind of like tough love, but it's true. So if you don't like where you are right now, then the only thing you can do is change what's the knowledge that you have. You got to go out and you've got to seek the knowledge and then put it into practice. All right? That's the other most important part of this, is you got to put it into practice. And then you can become that person that you want other things, but you don't have them. So how do you get those other things? You need to become another person on the inside. The outside can remain the same. It doesn't matter what you look like on the outside. You know, it doesn't matter what your circumstances are, because your circumstances will probably remain the same. But you've got to change what's going on the inside. And that will help you to get to where you need to be. And the only way you change from what's going on the inside is by educating yourself, by learning more. You know, we have, I don't know, 10,000 years of history, written history. Maybe it's 2,000. I don't know how many years of written history we have. But we've got all of those minds that have written great things. There is no skill out there. There is no place in life that you want to be that hasn't already been written about, that already hasn't been how-to'd how to get to. All you got to do is find it, study it, and put it into practice, those three things. So that is what business is all about. By the way, you know, when we talk about elevate, I talked about elevate a little bit earlier. Elevate is about having your next year be the best year that you've ever had, no matter where you are. And not just in your business, but in your life, your relationships, your health. And there's certain formulas. I teach how to buy and sell multifamily properties. I teach how to do business. But in reality, you know, I've been into self-improvement for a long, long time. And for the first time ever, I am teaching the things that I've learned along the way that allowed me to get to 8,000 customers. Crazy kid in a rock and roll band coming from a lower blue-class Boston family where nobody was an entrepreneur. Everybody was engineers. You know, you work for the man and you know, he took care of you, supposedly. And they always thought, my parents used to tell people I was adopted. They didn't know where I came from, all these crazy ideas. But what I did know is I wanted a different life than I was brought up in. And I was brought up in a lot of love, but I wanted things. And I'm not very materialistic, but I wanted the ability to have choices. So if I did want something, I could get it instead of, oh, that's just for other people. So one of the big things, one of the first things we do in Elevate is show you how to break through your limiting beliefs. First, you identify them, and then you break through them. You break through those limiting beliefs, and then we start to look at all the different aspects of the person that you need to become in order to have your best year, the best you've ever had going into the next year. Part of that is goal setting, but a small part of it. If you're interested in Elevate, go to daveevent.com. Daveevent.com, it will tell you all about it. The first meeting is October 5th, 6th up here in Plymouth, Massachusetts. All right, so let's get back to the next question, which is from Jose Pacheco from Kansas City, Missouri. He writes in, hey, what's the best way to analyze a property 50 units or less? Would I use the ROT, or is there another way of analyzing those types of deals without damaging the margins? Well, Jose, I'm not sure what you mean by ROT. But you would use the Trinity, and that's what we use, the Trinity, which is a cap rate of 8+, a cash-on-cash return of 12+, and a debt coverage ratio of 1.6. That's if you're bringing investors into the deal. So you would analyze that 50-unit deal using the same numbers. As a matter of fact, you use that same Trinity valuation for all deals until you start getting below 20. 10 to 20 are kind of like tweeners, but anything below 10, you base it on comparable values. You base it on cash flow for the entire property. So if you're buying a 3 to 6 unit property, you want a minimum of $600 a month positive cash flow for the entire property after all the income comes in, after all the bills are paid. If you got a 10-unit property, that jumps up to $800. Doesn't matter what the ratios say. Never buy a 10-unit property based on the ratios. Always buy it based on the comparables and the actual cash flow that's happening in the property. And we do that because if you're buying based on the cap rate and the cash-on-cash return, you're going to be paying too much. That's why you want to base it like single-family properties on the comparables, the comparable property area. So you wouldn't do anything for 50 units. So the break point's at 10 units and above. All right. So I'm going to open it up to, I guess, some more questions that were sent in, but we'll open it up for some more callers. Who's on the line? Who's on the Wisecracker line? On this beautiful Tuesday afternoon in Boston, where the Patriots open up their season, their defending season, Saturday, Thursday at 8:30. And the Red Sox are in first place. Of the New York City. You gotta love it. Who's next, Sala?
Okay, up next we have Jose. Jose, please go ahead.
Is this the Jose that wrote that question?
No. Hi, Dave. This is Jose from San Antonio, Texas. How are you?
Hey, Jose. Hey, are you the one who sent me the coffee and the cookies?
Yes, I was.
Thank you very much. I opened up that package this morning when I get into the office.
Awesome. Thanks. Awesome. Okay. Hope you like it.
Yeah, I haven't used the coffee yet, but the cookies are great.
All right. That's good. That's good. Dave, I have two questions, actually, or two things to discuss. One is, recently, I've received already two different listings where, from different agents, different brokers, where they advertise, you know, this is a really good property, even though it's a very tight market, but, you know, they are advertising at 6-7 cap based on actuals, and it looks pretty good from the outside. When I start digging up on the financials, it just turns out that it seems to be that they're having to sell at that higher cap rate than the typical market just because the amount of dollars per unit is astronomical, and maybe even going higher than a new building would be. For example, I'm having one that it's being advertised at 6-7 cap, but it's in Texas and at $178,000 per unit, which I've never heard of something that high. Have you seen that? Can you expand a little bit on that?
Well, first of all, you know, if you're in a rising market, and do you live in that area as well?
Yes. Well, I'm from Texas, so, you know, I consider anywhere Texas part of the neighborhood.
Okay, so one of the local paradigms that I fell into and that other investors will fall into in a marketplace is the fact that you'll start seeing prices in an emerging market go higher than you've ever seen before. And typically, that's when, if you're a local, that's when you'll want to pull out because you'll think the market's mm-hmm. peaked. But you've got to look at all the fundamentals below. You know, are jobs continuing to grow in the marketplace?
Yes.
Is infrastructure coming in? You know, is the leadership strong in the market? To give you an example, when I first started buying in Brockton, the smaller properties, 3-6s, I was buying them at $75,000 to $100,000 each. Some of them I got for $40,000, one I got for $2,000. And then the market started kicking in. I didn't know market cycles at the time, but I did realize that the market was changing after about a year and a half, 2 years of buying. Prices were going mm-hmm. up, rents were going up, which was great. And then when prices started hitting about $200,000, $225,000, that's the highest I'd ever seen a Brockton property hit. And I thought, oh, I got to start selling because, you know, this market's peaked out. It's going to go down the other way. Well, it got up to 300, 375, 400, 425.
Per unit?
Peaked out then. Yeah. No, for a building, for a three-family property.
Oh, okay.
So it's not – so if the numbers work in terms of the cash-on-cash return and the – your debt coverage ratio and your cap rate, although it doesn't seem like it would work at a 6. The lowest our Trinity works at is a 7.5,
mm-hmm.
usually.
Yeah.
But if the numbers work and you're in a rising market, then, you know, the light's still green.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you. And the second one is, you know, and just on a kind of separate topic, is, you know, our prayers to Houston people that are suffering with Hurricane
yeah.
Harvey. And also, I want to ask everyone listening just also, you know, raise their prayers for the Caribbean. My family is from Puerto Rico, and Hurricane Irma is coming by really strong. It's right now it's Category 5 with 185 miles an hour winds, and it's heading straight to Puerto Rico and the rest of the Caribbean. So please pray for people there.
Our prayers are definitely sent over to all the people in Texas and all the people not only in Puerto Rico and the Caribbean, but also in Florida that are in the track of
yes.
that storm.
All of them.
The storms. I was just in Puerto Rico about a year and a half ago. It's beautiful. Beautiful there. About my third time
nice.
There.
Nice. Awesome. All right.
Yeah, I should have opened up with that. I forgot all about it. But our hearts and prayers go out to our students out there in Houston and all the people that live there. We've got a competitor called Lifestyles in Houston. We're all brothers and sisters when tragedy strikes. And boy,
exactly.
that was a storm of a lifetime. So,
yep.
Yeah. So we're praying for Puerto Rico as well. Hopefully, it will divert off.
Hopefully, we're waiting for that high pressure area to, you know, get weakened and the hurricane go up. But we'll see. Time will tell. Thank you again, and have a good day, guys.
All right, Jose. You too.
Bye.
All right. Who is our next caller?
Okay. Up next, we have Cynthia. Cynthia, please go ahead.
Again, I'm getting off right at 2:00 today because I've got to myself be on a webinar. I'm just like you. I'm constantly learning as well. So, who's next?
Hi, Dave. This is Cynthia from Center Management down in Fort Worth. How are you?
Hey, Cynthia. What's going on? Are you the one that came
Not
to
much.
The seminar that day?
I did.
And I brought you up into the front of the room.
Oh no, that wasn't me. But I was at UP9. I've been to a couple of them. So we're going out to Long Beach in October, actually, too, for private money.
Oh, good. Long Beach? Isn't it Long Beach?
Yeah.
Oh, Long Beach. I thought you were saying Long Island. Here's something that happened. I was one of the last preview events I did, those two-hour events a couple years ago, was down in Fort Worth. And as I was giving the presentation, a property manager at the end stood up and out of the blue just said, I want all you people to know that this stuff works. And she says, I'm a property manager down here, and three of those people that he put up as testimonials, they're my clients, and I have six others that are Lindahl students, and they're all buying properties and down here in Texas, and I'm here because I want to learn how they do it so I can buy my own.
That's great. That is great. Well, I'm not that Cynthia, but it does work. I mean, it's working, and we're hoping to put an offer in today on a 16 door. So I have to tell you the story, though, how we found this property, because you all always talk about relationships and stories. And so my sister was coming back from the eclipse. They had gone up to Kansas to see it. And when she was driving back through my hometown in Oklahoma, she sent me a text and a picture of this building. And she said, oh, sis, here is a building that you need to buy. And it was this just old, rundown restaurant. And I was like, oh, sis, I think you're missing what I'm doing here. I'm not buying old, rundown restaurants. But my family used to own like a Dairy Delight. And she laughed and she said, that was the Dairy Delight that we used to own. I'm like, no way. But what I took from that picture was the broker's name was right there front and center. And so Oklahoma has got some really great markets. So I called this broker and told him that story. Because he said, well, I knew there was some history. And he goes, now I know that your family was one of the owners that I can use to sell. And I'm like, absolutely. I said, so do you, have any listings for multifamily or know of another broker that does a lot of multifamily? And he said, well, I don't do a lot, but I have a 16 door. And I was like, why don't you send me the numbers? And we just went up there this past weekend to take a look at it. It's a great property. Needs a lot of help. It was built in 75, needs some cosmetic stuff, but pretty solid. So my question with all that being said is we want to put an offer in, and I listened to one of your competencies a while back. Do we use an LOI or do we do an offer to purchase?
Yeah. I would probably go by what the broker would want. That's like a tweener, I said earlier. That's like a tweener. Between 10 and 20 units is a tweener property. So, I would ask the broker, are you used to getting LOIs for this? If he doesn't do a lot of multifamilies, he's probably used to the offer form.
Okay. So I'll ask him and see if that's what he'd like.
Yeah, just ask him how he wants to see the offer, LOI or offer form.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks so much.
All right, good luck with that property.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye, Dave.
Bye. All right, we have time for one more call. So who is that going to be, unless it's a quick one? Who's that call? Oh, by the way, if you're listening and you're in listen-only mode and you're wondering about the Multifamily Millions Boot Camp, we have 30 of them. Every year, we're probably coming to a city near you. So you just call the office at 781-878-7114. 781-878-7114. Ask Alice, the operator, for anybody that can give you some information about the events, if you're wondering what they're all about, or where the next one is in your particular area. We'd be happy to get you through the process. All right, who's our next caller?
Okay, up next we have Jania. Jania, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much. You know, Ukrainian chocolates are on the way. As soon as I close on this deal, I told you that as soon as I'm closing, I got this property under contract in Louisville, which is and that's why I wanted to ask you. I find it more difficult to sell Louisville to investors. Everybody, and I live in New York, everybody's heard about Atlanta and D.C. and Charlotte and Raleigh, and it's a lot easier to sell those places. The Midwest is just not as sexy. What would you tell people about also Cincinnati or Indianapolis, but right now it's Louisville. Unfortunately, it seems like nobody knows anything about it.
Well, that's just it. You need to educate them on Louisville and why the market's so good, and you know why there's a big opportunity there for appreciation, and why that's where they want to place their money for to grow. Why they want to plant their money there to grow it. So that's going to be up to you to educate them. Where are you getting your investors?
Friends and family, business associates, people I meet all the time. Some have no problem, but some have this resistance to Louisville. And every fact, I brought a lot of facts on like job growth, population growth, rent growth.
Yep.
I got all the statistics in the world, and I send them all the reports. And they still have this negative or skeptical predisposition towards Louisville. They just have not heard about it. They've invested in other markets like D.C. or Atlanta or, North and South Carolina. That seems a lot easier for people to stomach, but they just don't know anything about, and no matter what I say, it seems like it's very hard to sell.
Well, some will, some won't. So what? You move on. You just have to get more investors. You said some people are interested and some people aren't. Some people are not going to be buyers. It's as simple as that. They're not going to buy into that particular market. That's okay. That just means you need to expand the number of people that you have potentially investing in your deals. The only other advice I might be to give you for the people that are on the fence is to, instead of sending them the stats, actually talking with them. You know, either sitting talking with them or getting them over the phone, do a go-to meeting, you know, and show them why this has the potential of moving. And with your enthusiasm, that will definitely make a big difference in helping you close them. But, yeah,
okay.
Some people just won't. So that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got all different types of investors. The investors that will invest only in primary markets, so the ones that and then primary markets on the West Coast or primary markets on the East Coast, or some people that only want to invest in Texas, or some people that, you know, are okay with secondary and tertiary markets like Louisville. So you got to segment out your investors and just keep building that flock.
Mm-hmm. Would you say Louisville is a secondary or a tertiary market?
That would be a tertiary market. Secondary markets are larger cities, like
okay.
Charlotte, Orlando.
And the population of Metro Louisville is 1.3 million, so it's not a tiny little town. I think it's on par, actually, with Charlotte. It's a lot bigger than Knoxville or Chattanooga, for example. A lot of
is
people
it on par with Charlotte?
Don't quote me on
that's
that.
That's an interesting fact.
But 1.4. In terms of job growth, it's actually up there. It's 2.8 in terms of job growth. And 3.1 in terms of rent growth.
Louisville,
and the population.
I started showing people in Louisville 3 years ago.
Don't. But it is on your radar. It is on your emerging markets list for sure, right?
Yeah, we like Louisville.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where Muhammad Ali was born.
Yeah. And actually, I just got a great advice from Nelson. He told me talk to horse people. He says focus on talking to people
absolutely.
Who know.
Those people have money.
A Kentucky Derby and the Bourbon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. So you would continue just talking to people and educating them, and some people will, some won't, but okay. Because it's faster growth actually than Indianapolis or Cincinnati, you know, Louisville or Lexington. You know, so.
I like it. You don't have to sell me on the market. You're preaching to the choir. What you got to do is you just got to get more investors that are interested in investing in those type of markets as well. That's all. The numbers game.
Right.
Don't try to make it a conversion game. If you try to make it a conversion game and converting people, you know, especially converting people that don't want to buy, that doesn't work. The numbers is finding the buyers, getting the people to raise their hands that type of market.
So the population of Charlotte is 800,000, but it doesn't say the population of the metro, probably a lot larger.
I would think growing fast.
It's not much smaller than it's people compare it to Nashville, but a lot of brokers in the tertiary markets have been saying this: we are Nashville in the next 10 years. So that doesn't really, doesn't mean that it is really. It's not as fast growing as Nashville.
You don't know.
Okay.
I like the market. You got a lot of good points.
Thank you.
Pass them along. Okay. Send me that chocolate,
all right.
Do you?
Yeah, well, okay, preliminary, right, before I even close. Okay.
Sure, and then you can send me a bunch after you close. I'm open for
that.
Sounds
good,
Dave. Chocolate.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for everything. Bye. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
You too. All right. So we are at the 2-hour mark, and like I said, I've got to be on a webinar myself. So if you're a master student, you know what your homework is. You're out there putting 2 offers. They don't have to be killer deals. They don't have to even be deals you think you're going to get. You're really doing it to create the relationship and to get the experience. Then get yourself into 2 networking situations. And if you're not sure where to go, go to meetup.com. You know, go to your social gatherings and just get that person to ask you that one question. What do you do? And if you're interested in Elevate, which is a great program, go to elevate.com, L, with a capital L, I should have said that, capital L-E-V-A-T-E.com, capital L-E-V-A-T-E.com, Elevate. And if you're interested in any of the upcoming events or the multi-family boot camp, call the office, 781-878-7114. And that's it for me. I'm over and out. See you guys in 2 weeks. Next week, it's Let's Grill Genie. The fall season has officially begun.